think leaders should ask themselves regularly, what's it like to be led by me? Inviting people to the table is great, but inviting people to the table is not enough. It's about when you're in a room and you're facilitating a meeting, how are you involving the people in the room? If you're not having one-to-ones with the people that report into you, honestly, we're missing a massive opportunity.
Welcome back to KPI Fireside, a continuous improvement podcast. If this is your first time listening in, welcome. We are so happy to have you join us. Our mission here is simple, to improve companies and improve careers through continuous improvement. So whether you're just starting out or looking to take your improvement efforts to the next level, this podcast is here to guide, inspire, and empower you. I am your host, Keith Norris, and our guest today is Catherine McDonald. Catherine is a leadership and executive coach as well as a lean consultant. Her expertise is in building better leaders, stronger teams, more effective systems. She has a background in organizational behavior and applies a people-first mindset. She focuses on providing structured space for process and people development. And Catherine, we are so happy to have you join us here today. Where are you joining us from? Where are you located?
Hi, Keith. How are you? I'm joining from Ireland, from a place called Kildare in Ireland today, and I'm delighted to be here. Thanks for the invite. It's great.
Wonderful. Yeah, I've seen your stuff on LinkedIn. You're always posting some really great insights about Lean, and I thought it would be awesome to have a conversation with you. So thanks so much for joining us.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome.
So we like to start the KPI Fireside podcast with a little segment we call The Spark. And what I've noticed is a lot of folks that are in this thing we call continuous improvement or lean, there's usually like a moment that they can remember in their life where like something kind of clicked and they're like, I think this could be my career. I'm wondering if there's like a moment or a memory or a particular point in your life where that happened to you.
Actually, there is, but it wasn't the word lean I was attracted to actually at all. So I went back to college a number of years ago and I studied organizational behavior as a master's. And I remember sitting in the sitting room beside my husband and just wondering, what am I going to do? I wanted to move out of the industry that I was in at that time. I was in social care and I'd done 10 years and I just felt I want to do something else. So I started looking up these different courses and I hit on this one called organizational behavior. And I started reading down through the different modules and it covered people dynamics and it covered why organizations fail. And then it covered quality and lean and agile. And I was just hooked. I remember showing my husband, I have no idea what this is, but I definitely, I looked it all up and it just attracted me so much that I do remember that moment. So it wasn't, I knew nothing about lean, but I knew what it was connected to. And that's what interested me.
I love that answer. And I find that question so good because all of us have this, like, a lot of times it's like a single moment or a memory where that happened. And I do find that people in this discipline, and I know that lean is like one flavor or one version of this that's like a well-recognized way to discuss it. But the umbrella is much broader. I like to refer to it as just continuous improvement. And I think you touched on something that I believe in, is that there's something inside of us, this like desire to get better and to continue to improve. And I think that this label of lean that fits in this continuous umbrella, I think oftentimes captures that. So I love to hear your passion about this as a discipline and how you got interested in that. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about some of your journey. So you have some education, some schooling in this, and now you're as a consultant. What are some of the steps in between?
I changed direction over the years. I actually started out working in the nonprofit sector and I sort of found my way into lean and leadership coaching while I was in that sector. I went back and I did some study. I did a master's and I did some qualifications in lean, green belt, black belt. And then I did some coaching qualifications. And so 10 years ago, I started my business, but I was largely a subcontractor. So I was very lucky to have some good relationships, good networks with some larger consulting companies in Ireland. So I started my business that way. And that saw me actually take on a lot of smaller, what we call in Ireland, lean for micro projects. And what they are really, that's where the local enterprise offices would give companies in Ireland, small to medium companies, hours with a mentor. So that was how I started out. It was sort of short-term projects projects, if you like to call it that. And I had about 20, 30 hours with each client from all sorts of different sectors, sectors I'd never worked in before, bringing in this kind of lean and leadership mindset and methodology. So I did about 100 of those or more. And I guess I realized it actually wasn't for me, that kind of short-termism approach. So what I've done really now with my own business is I have decided I want to work with companies for longer term, if you like to put it that way. So I try to work with companies where the companies and the leadership in the companies understand that continuous improvement and improvement in general takes a lot longer than 3 months. So I work with companies who are interested in this idea and their teams, and I bring them through one-to-one coaching, and I work side by side with teams. And that's basically where I'm at now. I have some really good partnerships with some really good companies, and I'm in them for the long haul for at least a few years to try and help them improve over time.
That's very interesting. We think about this idea of continuous improvement. On one hand, you're like, continuous, it should be like all the time, every second of every day. But in reality, there is like a staccato or a cadence with improvements. And I think I'm kind of curious, like, you know, you talked about like these 2 or 3 week or month long projects. Sometimes that's very intermittent. I'm curious if you have thoughts on how to go from periodic improvement to more continuous.
Yeah, definitely. Well, if companies are not used to continuously improving, which generally they're not when I go in, they're used to being stuck in the same way they've always done things, and that's generally reactive. So I think really what we need to do is help companies to see that, first of all, that basically you're not continuously improving. Maybe you're making efforts to improve over time, but are they actually leading to continuous improvement over time? So we've got to get that mindset. We've got to do a little digging, and we've got to get people to see, actually, if you want real continuous improvement, you've got to create the space for it. And you've got to involve the people doing the work and all the things that we know are really important. So a lot of the time, I think people think they're doing it, but they're actually not.
When you say make space for improvement, drill down on that for us a little bit. What do you mean by that? What does that actually look like?
So I'll just give you an example. Oftentimes when I go into an organization, people come in, everybody comes in, does their job. They know what their job is largely. They'll come in, they'll do their job, and they'll do it probably in the same way they've always done it. They do follow some sort of processes and they do a good job largely. But I could go in a month later, 2 months later, and everybody would be doing things in very similar ways. So what I mean by space is the opportunity to step back from what you're doing. Pause, press pause. Step back, look objectively at what you're doing in your role every day, the processes that you engage in and that you use, and say, how am I doing these processes? And get some people together with you and go, how are we doing these processes? And then look at it and understand, okay, could we do it any better? That space to step back is largely what we don't give people. I think a lot of people either put the pressure on themselves, or other people might put the pressure on them to come in and do. They feel they have to be seen to be doing a lot of the time. So when I go in, I guess one of the first things that I try and work on with people, in, especially in our one-to-one leadership coaching, where again is a space to reflect on their own behaviors, is to understand this need to get off autopilot and to give some structured, focused space to understanding how we can improve.
I think that's so interesting. I think that there's a misperception in a lot of companies, particularly big companies. As employees, I think employees feel like, oh, my boss wants me to be busy all of the time. I get in trouble if I'm not busy. But I think as, let's just say, inspired or enlightened leaders who believe in continuous improvement, you have this knowing that there has to be some sort of a reflection, a pause. You have to create a little bit of space or a little bit of time for that improvement. I'm curious if you have some recommendations. And I'm assuming that it's probably different at different levels. If I'm somebody working in a machine shop, the amount of time I need to spend reflecting is probably different than if I'm a general manager or a site manager or a executive vice president over 20 plants or something. Do you have any guidance on how frequently or how much time people should spend on that set of reflection questions?
Yeah, so I think you're right. It's not the same for everybody. So it's not like I can give a recipe. But I think what we need to start off with is meeting with the people who do the work in their place of work. So go to the Gemba and understand what exactly the work consists of. And then it's a case of asking questions and being curious and saying, well, how often do you step back? Sometimes they do. You know, they have weekly meetings. They may have a quick huddle in the morning. Like, so they are, it's rare you go into somewhere and they're not stepping back at all, right? But I guess my next question is, well, if you're doing these things, how effective are they? So as well as just lining up the work for the day, which is the way the daily huddles are often used. Okay, let's, who's doing what? How about we see, can we ask better questions and even bring in a simple question like, what's one thing we could do better today than we did yesterday? So for example, yesterday we got our 50 deliveries out and we had 6 customer complaints coming back to us yesterday. We know what happened basically, but can we talk about how we can do it better today? So you're using those little existing platforms, as I call them, to see, can we build in some improvement discussion to make it simple, not complicated, make it very simple, but to get everybody focused on thinking, I guess, critically about their performance and the team's performance. And how could we, let's have a quick conversation. How could we do it better? And that then leads people, it involves people, but it also raises their commitment to doing better when we talk about it as a team.
Absolutely. Just for the sake of a little bit of context, could you share with us some of the industries that you've worked in?
Yep. I made a joke once. I had to do a speech. And the first thing I said when I stood up is, so I've worked with butchers, I've worked with bakers. Now, any candlestick makers here in the audience? Because honestly, I've just worked in so many different types of industries. So nonprofit would have been my background. So I've worked in a lot of nonprofits, specifically in the disability sector, a lot of the time, because that was my area. So I tried to do a bit of work there. And then moving to hospitality. So I've worked in lots of different hotels and cafes and bars. And then I've worked in different types of retail and shops. So anything from a regular grocery shop to a bridal shop. I've worked in printers. I've worked in food and drink manufacturing. Honestly, there's just been so many, I couldn't even give you the list.
It's so interesting. And this is, again, this is a story that I hear a lot from practitioners in this discipline, because I think a lot of people feel like, oh, I'm in a certain industry. This is the thing I know. But this idea of business improvement or continuous improvement, the core principles apply to basically every industry. And I'm fond of SQDC, safety, quality, delivery, costs. When you were mentioning just a minute ago about what could we do today that's a little bit better than what we did yesterday? You dropped a couple of metrics that I would describe as either delivery or cost. And I find that even across sectors, from manufacturing products to delivering services, I personally am not as familiar with nonprofit, but I'm kind of curious, maybe you could talk to a little bit on how some of those metrics or some of the things that you use to measure improvement might vary a little bit across, like from nonprofit to manufacturing or services.
Yeah, so manufacturing is still probably, I would say, the easiest industry to work on, because we're all set up with the metrics, as you say, to be able to know and say, and at our huddles have like, okay, in terms of, you know, safety and 5S, we have our, you know, we know how many incidents we had, this, that, and the other. So it's just so easy. And it's probably still the industry that I work most in, because I think it's just sort of this still stuck to manufacturing, this whole idea. But when you move into different sectors, there are metrics. There actually are loads of metrics. They're generally not visible at all. People fill in documentation day to night, but very little in some industries of that documentation is turned into real metrics. So one of the first things I have to do when I go into an organization is understand, well, what data do you collect? Why are you collecting it? Okay, well, what data is going to be really important for continuous improvement? Where are the real gaps? And so the issues and the goals, where's the gaps? And what metrics do we need in terms of filling those gaps? So sometimes, you know, we don't have machinery. We have people working with people a lot of the time. So in some industries, it's a little bit easier. So you've got, like in cafes, it could be waiting times for customers. It could be turnaround time between the order going in and the food coming out. Again, customer reviews. There's loads of little things you can do in different industries. I find it's a little bit more difficult in nonprofits. And generally, what I try and do is really zoom in on the customer experience as the metric. So we will try to dig really deep into, because that's actually what the people doing the care work are really interested in as well. They're there because they're so passionate about the care they provide for people. So really all the metric that they're interested in is how good a job are we doing? How much of an impact are we having on people's quality of life? So our questions and our metrics need to be designed about the quality of life and experience that those clients are getting. And in some cases, there just aren't good enough systems to get that feedback. So part of the work I do is around getting that feedback. And when we get that feedback, it informs us then, well, which systems do we need and practices and behaviors and processes do we need to work on internally to provide the client with a better experience?
Love it. There's a famous Jeff Bezos quote. Somebody interviewed him about how do you stay on top of innovation and always know what the best products are? And he kind of shot back and said, look, I don't concern myself too much with that. We build a strategy on the things that are not going to change. And for us, it's people want lower prices and people want faster delivery. And I think that's a pretty good lesson for pretty much everybody in every industry. I've got a family member right now who's going through a diagnosis that he has cancer, and they've done some scans, and he's waiting 2 weeks now for these scans to be read, and the whole family's just sitting here like, really? Like, this person's afraid for their life. They think they're going to die, and the best we can do is 2 weeks to read their scans. And it dawns on me that, you know, in every industry, everybody wants things faster. Everybody wants a better price. And a lot of, you know, the discipline that gets the lean label put onto it, which sometimes I think is a little bit myopic for what we're actually doing, how some of these principles are just so universal. Delivery, like you go and you order a coffee at the coffee shop. Sure, you want your coffee faster, you know?
And the other part of it, Keith, is it's under, so there's two sides, I guess. There's the customers, and then it still do always go back to the importance of the voice of the customer. Why do we exist to provide a product or a service for our customer? So the customer, what the customer thinks matters hugely. And then secondly, the people who we've employed within our company, I guess getting the metrics around how they feel about the company, how engaged they are in the work, what would make their work easier, faster, better. That all matters too. And oftentimes I think that's really overlooked. And I know we hear about employee engagement and it's all over LinkedIn, but really I wonder, are we harnessing people in the way that we could or should be within, whether it's our hospitals or hotels? Are we actually, you know, showing people they're valued, developing them, supporting them to do the work in the first place? And I really don't think we are.
I think when it comes to the traditional eight wastes of lean, I think that underutilized talent is probably one of the biggest waste that exists for most people. I have a belief that everybody would rather work in a company that's engaging, that they feel like their work matters, it feels like they're making a difference. Of course, they're well recognized financially or in various ways, but not everybody is in that situation. Some people are in a, you know, in a situation where they hate going to work or they feel like they have to work. What are some of the differences? What is it that makes one company super engaging and exciting and great and one, you know, not so great? I think you probably have some insights on that.
Everything always comes back to respect for people. When people feel respected, when they feel valued for the work they do, and when they feel their work is important, when they feel there's a purpose to it, these are not fluffy terms. These are real, real feelings, and there is a real opportunity to make people feel this way. It's just not done enough. I think a lot of the time with no real, I guess, it's not a criticism of senior leadership, but it's the way that the leader role has evolved, I think. So we know, you're nodding away, everybody I speak to, you know, we all know that respect for people is a huge cornerstone for continuous improvement and for organizational engagement and all of these things. But when it comes down to how to do it, the way, if you even think about what senior leaders say to mid-level managers is, we want results. You're here, we're putting you in this position to get results. So what do mid-level leaders go and say to their teams? I want results. Okay, I want faster. I want better. I want whatever. I want we need results. But I think they've forgotten about people themselves and just focused on the results. So instead of saying, I want results, no, there's pressure on me. We need to deliver. What we really need to be saying to engage people and involve people and respect people is, we need results. What can we do to get these results? How can we work together? How can we work more effectively together to get these results? You know, tell me about what you think we can do. But no, that conversation often doesn't happen.
I'm a big fan of quotes. Some folks know I've got a little book of quotes. I'll give a little plug for it here. Book of quotes.
Yeah.
One of my favorite quotes is, in theory and practice are the same. In practice, they're not. So it's one of the things I love about this discipline is the principles of lean or continuous improvement or respect. It's so easy for all of us to say, yes, you should respect people. And if you know me, you know how respect and assertive respect is one of my core values. But I admit I'm not good at it 100% of the time. There's things that I do all the time, every day in my interactions that might come across as disrespectful. And me, just like a lot of other people, you know, there's the quote, it's hard to read the label from inside the jar. It's hard to be self-aware of yourself in reality. So that's one thing that I find so interesting about this discipline is how many layers there are. You know, like, yes, results matter. And yes, people matter. But there's so much more to just knowing that. It's just a discipline of practice. Do you have any special advice or things that people can do behaviorally or ritually, like patterns in their organization to communicate that respect for people?
Well, behaviorally, there's so many different competencies we could talk about. And it's some of the work that I do one-on-one with leaders is understanding what respect looks like. So, you know, a lot of people think it's about saying please and thank you. And we know it's way beyond that. It's about, you know, first of all, inviting people to the table is great, but inviting people to the table is not enough. It's about when you're in a room and you're facilitating a meeting, how are you involving the people in the room? It could be your daily huddle. It could be your weekly meeting. You might think you're being respectful by bringing people together, but actually, are you inviting them to participate in the conversation? Are you asking them for their opinions? Are you listening without judgment as much as possible, you know, or at least trying to be as curious as possible when they do speak up? You know, it's as much as what you don't do as what you do. And it's about leaders being aware of their own behaviors in their interactions with people. And yeah, maybe not always doing the right thing, but at least having the ability to reflect on it afterwards, maybe go back and say sorry if you didn't do the right thing. And then being able to say, well, you know, what caused me to act like that? You know, do I want to be better? If I want to be better, what do I need to do differently next time? And again, I mentioned space earlier, having the space to be able to go off and, you know, work on your self-awareness and develop yourself in this way. So that's just, I suppose, what leaders can do for themselves. And having a coach obviously helps because it's very hard to create the space and do this by yourself. I mean, who of us works during the day, stops to think about these things and goes home and then says, I'm going to have a little reflection for myself and work through how my day went and how my interactions went? We don't do that. So that's the purpose of having a coach in your life, because they are like this accountability partner who will guide you to have these conversations that can be a little bit uncomfortable and just so difficult to work through by yourself, right? So coach or mentor, whatever you like to call them, that's really important. And then on the other side of it, I think when you're in the work environment, a lot of it is about understanding that your job is not just to get results, right? It's about creating the right environment for people to succeed, to get the results. So it's about looking at, well, how do I do that? And that is about looking for opportunities to speak with people, interact with people, bring people together to, let's say there's a problem, you know, right, I know as the leader, I need to resolve this, but I also know that it's not on me and the people doing the work know the problem. So I'm going to respect them and bring them in and talk to me about it and we'll work it out together. So things like daily huddles, even on your Gemba walks, for people that don't know, a Gemba walk is your daily walk around as a leader where you stop by, you chat to people, you observe the processes, you understand, I guess, the standard way of working, and you're checking in to see how is the standard way of working? Is it? Are people following it? If not, why not? So you're having these conversations where, again, you're involving people in understanding if the way that we have set things out is clear enough for you to be able to do your work confidently and competently. And also, maybe we haven't done everything right. Tell us what you think. What's your experiences of work? And we're improving in that way through our interactions and spending time with people in their place of work. So all those things, creating those right platforms, it does not need to be big, long meetings. It is about creating space in your own calendar to go and have these interactions on a regular, consistent basis.
Catherine, I know a lot of people think that respect is just like being nice to people. And I'm assuming, based on your expertise, that you might be able to tell us the difference between just being nice to someone and what it means to have respect for someone.
Yeah, I will give you an example. So more than once it has happened where I go into an organization and I'm working with leaders, senior leaders, and I'm working with mid-level managers. And I get a sense of the relationship between the management team, right? And oftentimes I work with such great senior leaders who really want things to work really well. And they tell me that they're doing everything they can to support their mid-level managers. And we break that down and I say, okay, well, what does that look like? Well, I'm there for them. I listen. I see what they need. I pick up the phone. I ring them every day and I talk to them every day. And it sounds so respectful. And then I say to them, so do you challenge them? And they go, yeah. And I said, what do you mean by that? Well, you know, I let them know if something needs to be done or if there's a problem. So we have the whole conversation about respect being way beyond being there for people. Yes, you have to be there for people, but also you have to let people go and you have to trust people to do their work. And in some ways, you might need to develop them before you can do that. So respecting people is seeing their potential, the potential to do the job without you holding their hand. And sometimes that means you have to have tough conversations and you have to hold these people accountable in a way to being able to do their work and deliver on it. And sometimes that means in a tough conversation saying, I know you can do better. You know, I know that, you know, we need this as an organization for you in your role to be able to operate without me, you know, so you're challenging people. So I do think that respect is about listening. It is about asking. It is about guiding. It's about all those things, but it's also about challenging people. And in a fair but firm way that shows people, wow, they believe in me, you know, they really believe in me. They really value me. They see that before I see, they see that I can do more. And I think that is part of respect for people that is not often, I suppose, doesn't often happen in organizations in that way, which is a pity.
Oh, that's great. That's a great answer. I'm finding you've got such great answers on some of these. These are some of the tough topics, right? Lean's so simple. But one of the things that I personally find a little bit interesting or challenging is you've got this idea of lean and respect for people, and it's giving people time and being patient and letting people develop. And then at some point, there's a line where, you know, you do have performance standards and you do need to perform. So how might you reconcile those two extremes where on one hand, maybe you could be overly aggressive and not put up with any mistakes from anybody ever versus maybe you put up with too many mistakes or poor performance? How do you find that the right balance?
So are you talking a bit, it's like accountability without blame, basically?
That's a great word, accountability.
Yeah. Yes, that's kind of what I talk about with my leaders that I coach. And it's some of the questions I ask them is, and I explain just what you said. And I said, how do you do this? You know, how do you protect and maintain your relationships and get on well with people and, you know, enjoy your day and make sure they enjoy their day? But at the same time, how do you make sure that they do the work that, you know, that needs to be done? Because ultimately, it's going to come back on you as well, right? So yes, that is really, really tough. And I do think that one-to-ones are my biggest go-to for leaders and managers. I think if you're not having one-to-ones with the people that report into you, because most of us are in a hierarchical system here, honestly, we're missing a massive opportunity. When I actually train leaders to do one-to-ones, because oftentimes I go in and they're just not done or not done consistently. So if you imagine what a one-to-one looks like, a manager sits down with their direct report, and the way I explain it, it is more of a two-way conversation, but it's a space to have that two-way conversation. And within that two-way conversation, what the manager is saying is things like, what's going well for you? What's not going well for you? Okay, and talk to me about the things that are not going well. Let's work through them. And gosh, well done on the things that you are making progress with. And that's really great to see. And I must stop by and look at that. And you're having a really good uplifting conversation about that, but you are getting deep into what's not going well. Now, there's also a space there for the manager to give feedback and the manager to get feedback, right? So I think if managers do this regularly on a monthly, if not more, basis, people get into the habit of having these deeper accountability conversations. And one of the managers that I work with actually turned around to me a few weeks ago and he said, like, I said, how are you getting on with your work? And he was kind of snowed under a little bit. And he actually turned around and he said to me, you know what? My manager's holding me more accountable now. We have a great relationship, but the relationship has just become a little bit more formal of late, probably because it had to. But I feel that that's what I needed. I needed somebody to turn around and be very clear with me about the deliverables and the expectations. And if I didn't have that, I probably was trying to do everything or I didn't know what the priorities were. So these one-to-ones gave that manager and his direct report, who's also a manager, that opportunity to really figure that out, you know, get it clear what support you need. And then of course, if it's done, great, because everything was clear and the support's in place. If it's not, we up the one-to-ones. We have them every week instead of every 1 month. Maybe we reduce the actions, but maybe we look at workload, but we keep, I guess, applying our PDCA, our Plan, Do, Check, Act to our one-to-ones and to our accountability, as well as do our processes to understand how do we help this person to become more accountable? Because actually, it's a skill. It's a skill to be accountable. So it's my job as a manager, if my team aren't being accountable, to develop them to be accountable. And we keep working at it.
I love it. I love that. I love that answer. What would you say is the best way to run one-on-ones?
Okay. So one-to-ones, I believe, should be done at least monthly. So every manager should have at least one-to-one with every direct report at least monthly. Now, some people will need more than just one a month, and that's something to be worked out, but definitely at least monthly. So within those one-to-ones, I do think there it needs a semi-structure. And it does need to be documented in parts. Otherwise, we don't get that flow between one-to-ones and it's not really developing people over time. So we do need that bit of documentation and actions. And basically, you're looking at the managers asking simple questions. What's going well? What's not going well? Have you any feedback for me? Would you like some feedback from me? And okay, what's in terms of what's challenging you, what are the actions that you know you're going to take? And let's work through those to understand those and let you go out and take them before I see you again next month. And then we'll come back and we'll check in, pretty much following our PDCA cycle. We'll check back in to see how you got on with those actions. And then we will see, we'll go from there and see what the next steps are.
Awesome. That's great. Excellent. Thank you for doing that. I feel like that's a hot topic that everybody's trying to figure out how to get those just right. On this one-on-ones, do you have any like special questions? I know you touched about a few, like what's going well, what's not going well. Are there any questions that you're particularly fond of or maybe you've seen used in specific instances that worked particularly well?
I like to keep it fairly open, but there's another question I didn't mention there. So it's a case of, well, okay, how do you know in your mind that you're doing a good job? So that's where if we have metrics tied to the role, which again, some companies do, some don't, we can bring those in. Now, I think metrics are more important for the person doing the work than they are for the manager because everybody wants to know they're doing a good job. So when we write our job descriptions, if we put metrics in there, they really should be for the person to assess themselves and then have a conversation about it in their one-to-ones. Again, I kind of take all these lean tools and principles and apply them to people, not just processes. But that for me is a pull system, not a push system. We often push metrics and push tasks onto people. Whereas when we set up one-to-ones to pull that information, the relationship between managers and their direct reports is so different. And it turns into a supportive, trusting relationship as opposed to the manager, you know, being in command and control and being seen as, you know, on a different level.
Yeah. You mentioned something there about who the metrics are for. Do you have thoughts or opinion on who should, is it important for the individual to touch the number or to take, you know, how do they take responsibility for the metrics? You're nodding your head. I'm curious if you know, the best way to do that. Some people just have things that are reported and they're put up on the wall, but I think that there's a little different behavior that's ideal in some
Yeah, so there's team metrics, right? So you have your SQCDP board, right? And you've got your team metrics on that, and everybody knows what the team metrics are, and they're called out every morning. But then I think you've got your individual metrics. Now, I'm not a fan, let me say, of performance reviews and rating people. I do not believe in that. I do not believe it's good for any relationships in any organization, but I am a fan of self-reporting and feedback. So what I mean by that is, if you get a new report, a new employee into the organization and they're your direct report, I would always, in the first one-to-one, ask them to self-report on their own measures. So I would say, right, well, I don't really want to be coming to you telling you about your performance. I want you to come to me. So I want you to set up an Excel sheet and talk to me in our next one-to-one about the measures that you see that are really important, that are telling you that you're doing a good job. And then I'll give you feedback, you know, and we'll talk through it. But that's the way I think it should work.
I love that. I'm a fan. I call it the daily number. And I believe every person in every organization should have their own daily number that they're responsible for. We actually use a little app called Stand Up Alice for reporting on the daily huddles each day. And it has, like, you know, what did you do? What are you doing? What's your daily number? And everybody's daily number is a little bit different, a little bit unique. And again, there's flexibility in there, because depending on your type of work, if you're doing the same thing every day, your number might be the same every day. But some people might have more project-oriented work where their daily number is the thing that they're using to get feedback on their performance and to make adjustments from day to day. And, you know, that's kind of the essence of a continuous improvement system, is you have to have measurements so that you can see, are we on target? Are we not on target? That's great. Definitely. Catherine, I'm curious, you've got experience in organizational behavior and experiences in lean. I know that lean sometimes is a polarizing topic. Some people love it. Some people hate it. Some people feel like it's a weapon that's been used against them and they've been terminated because some, you know, private equity company used lean to lay people off. What are some of the things that you think are great about lean that should be applied? And what are some things that maybe people tend to get wrong about lean?
Okay, the things that are great about lean, I guess if we go beyond the lean words and the buzzwords, the lean tools are what we hear most about, you know, Kaizen, Kanban boards. When people talk about lean, they often bring those words into the conversation. Not everybody, but often. Even in college, black belt level, I have to say and have to admit, I came out not understanding that lean isn't this bunch of projects you do in organizations. I'm almost ashamed to admit it, but there wasn't this deep understanding in me that lean is about connecting with the people that we work with. It's about understanding, you know, from people's perspective, what's going well, what's not going well. And it is about using the right tools and working on systems to make work faster, better, you know, cheaper, all the rest. But it's about the how, and it's about the people. And it's not a project. It's about an ongoing way of working, which is built on respect for people and continuous improvement. So they're the things that are great about lean, that the essence of it, the focus on people, the focus on involving people, on respecting people, all of that is amazing. If every company did that, I mean, we'd have a different world, right? The things that are not so good about lean is that people don't understand that, I guess. There are people that go in, consultants, managers, who do a course in lean, maybe a belt. I'm not a fan of the traditional belts. I think they're backwards, to be honest, because we have to get to black belt before we understand that leadership is such a huge part of influencing lean and how to lead on lean. We don't cover that very much in white belts, green belts, but most people get up, go to the white belt or green belt level, some of them, yellow belts probably most people do. And we don't come away with that understanding that lean is so far beyond these lovely, shiny, you know, visual boards, which are great when they're used properly, and so far beyond the buzzwords. But people come back and then they expect to do these kinds of lean projects and see improvements as a result of using these lovely value stream maps and process maps, but they haven't got the people and the interaction and the behaviors and the culture right. And so I do think lean is amazing. But in the way that lean is talked about, I think there's a whole piece of work to be done to set up the right environment for us to even introduce the words associated with lean, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's interesting. I find there's a lot of variation in how people feel this thing called continuous improvement, how it should be structured in an organization, where it should be led from. I'm curious if you have some, well, and let me also start by saying, look, if we compare work today in 2025 versus work in factories in 1920 and Henry Ford's automobile, work conditions have gotten better. I think on average, most of us enjoy our work. Now, in so many ways, things have gotten a lot better. If we look forward into the future, what are some of the things that you think people can look forward to or improvements in how this continuous improvement thing, how this discipline evolves or how work evolves?
Yeah. So, I mean, organizations are investing more in leadership development. I think they're understanding that leadership development isn't just a workshop, a one-day training, right? So I do think we're getting better at investing in developing leaders to be able to lead on things like continuous improvement and lean and whatever other quality methodology you want to talk about. But so that's one thing. We're getting more understanding. The second one is obviously with technology and technological advancements, I would hope that it will get easier, that we won't have to, you know, put as much work into the things we have to do right now to notice problems, to even solve problems, to analyze problems. I would hope that technology will be there to do some of that for us, and it will free us up to just focus on supporting each other, working together, that you know, we'll be focusing more on problem prevention in a more proactive way than focusing on cheapers putting out the fires. So I guess that's my hope. I don't know, because it could go the other way. It could go the other way, but we have to hope.
Well, one thing I know, I've worked, you know, like you, with a lot of different industries and a lot of different disciplines, and even some of the biggest companies that I thought were at the top of their industry. It seems like every company always needs more people that know how to solve problems in like a constructive, structured way. I feel like there's an overabundance of people that shoot first, aim later, you know, kind of thing. And that's one thing that I love about this discipline is just the idea of plan, do, check, act, strategic alignment, so many things like that.
I think, Keith, though, we have to get better at that, like really a lot better. So if you think, even just, I always go to the C's in PDCA and DMAIC, and oh my gosh, the amount of organizations that do plan, do, but don't check in properly. Don't like follow up. And it's the same with DMAIC. We get to a certain point where we understand the problem, we improve, we put a stopgap in, but then we don't put a control on it. So I think I would love to see that part getting better. Not quite sure how we do that, but we have to be, once we're aware of it, I guess we can do something about it.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting topic. What does check actually look like, either at the project level, at a department level? What does that look like?
Yeah, well, obviously we can only check in on something if it's been, the actions are clear and if there's a measure of it in the first place, which is why we use, you know, our DMAIC for something that needs a measure. But the check is really, it comes down to, again, this is the leader, which is why we have leaders, not to, you know, give people the solutions, but to bring people together to facilitate these conversations. So the leader, let's say, who's facilitating this conversation using DMAIC, they will walk through, let's talk through the problem. Let's make sure that people bring evidence and data into the meeting or whatever it is to make sure that we are clear on the problem. Okay, do we have a measure of the problem? We do. Now we know it is a problem. So yet we do have to understand it. So we analyze it, right? Then, right, once we analyze it, we have to come up with the improvements options. So we're going to talk through those. We're going to use effort and impact. We're going to look at cost, benefit, and we're going to come up with what we think is the best way forward. But what a lot of leaders don't do, and this comes down to really their organizational skills, their more systems thinking skills, is that we need now to put a check-in date to come back. It's as simple as that, Keith.
Yeah.
They just are not doing it. We're not putting check-in dates, and we're not being clear on roles and deadlines. We're not structured enough in our conversations and our interactions in many cases. And then, of course, the weeks fly by, something else takes our attention. We focus on that. We do a whole DMAIC on that, and we don't check in on that. And that's what's happening everywhere.
Yeah. I like to use the term just business review to summarize that activity of whether it's a daily huddle where we're reviewing yesterday and planning today, or a weekly meeting at the value stream level where we're looking back and looking forward, or it's a monthly level at a business unit. Maybe we're looking at financials, or even on an annual basis, you know, quarterly or annual, where we're looking back at the last year, we're planning the next year. So the idea that there's a business review, and that can happen for a part of the business or it can happen for a project. And, you know, again, one of the things I love about this discipline is the structured problem solving. There's like these models that when you start to understand them, like, oh, this, I can apply this in so many other ways. My favorite is when I hear somebody who tells me that they took some skill that they learned, maybe it's 5S or you know, just anything else, and they applied it at home in their garage or their sock drawer, you know, like they figured out how to, you know, better plan a trip or a vacation or something. So I love that there's so many layers to it. You touched on a couple of things a minute ago that I want to drill down on. I think in Ireland, you mentioned that there was maybe a government program or something to help out with small manufacturers. Did I pick up on that correctly?
Yeah. For small to medium enterprises in Ireland. So in each county in Ireland, there would be what we call a local enterprise office. And that local enterprise office would reach out to small to medium businesses and they would say, we provide grants and we provide mentoring for you to improve your business. And within that, there's what's called a lean for micro. So that's for the smaller businesses where you get 20 or 30 hours with a lean or leadership or whoever consultant to go out into your business, understand issues and help you, let's say, resolve them, right? Now, you can also go on, I think, slightly bigger companies who have maybe bigger or medium companies who have bigger needs. They can actually go on and get more funding. They can do a second lean for micro. They can do a lean plus. They can do a lean transform. And there are a lot of grants available to companies who will apply for these. We don't get enough businesses applying for them because, as you can imagine, it takes time to step back and work with a mentor on these things. And a lot of people simply, again, I guess, don't think they have the time to invest in this, which is unfortunate.
You know, this is funny. This is something that I'm in Salt Lake City, Utah, in the United States of America. And right now we're recording this in May of 2025. I'm not going to get into politics, but let's just say there's a big conversation about manufacturing and made in America kind of stuff going on. And there are government programs in our 50 states to empower small manufacturers and, you know, to help them do more. And I love to hear that that's happening in Ireland too, because that's an example of continuous improvement where, you know, we could be general managers of plants working in different countries, and you have this thing that's working well. Hey, we should have this program. We should teach people these skills and these tools and this methodology. We're not necessarily enforcing them to go use them in any particular way, but we're empowering them with skills and knowledge and asking them to go and apply it in their own way. And I think that that model, I mean, you know, we're kind of discussing how that can be applied by countries to promote manufacturing in their organization. I think that same model can be applied. You know, first of all, small manufacturers should absolutely take advantage of those opportunities. If you haven't ever thought about that, go look into it, because I know, at least in Ireland and in the United States of America, probably in other countries, ABI Fire has a lot of customers outside of those two countries. So I would encourage people to look for programs. And if you're aware of programs, somebody that's listening to this, please reach out to me. I would love to learn more about the programs they're available, because the other question I wanted to come back to, Catherine, has to do with your role as a consultant. I believe that there's certain things that consultants can do better than internal employees can do. What are some of the things that you as a consultant can do or can see inside of a company that companies might not be able to do for themselves?
I suppose the first piece would be facilitation skills. It's not something that's often talked about. We talk about coaching, we talk about mentoring. We don't often talk about facilitation, this ability to bring people together and guide a conversation so that the conversation happens in a constructive way, right? So oftentimes I'll see managers and leaders who just struggle with those kinds of chairing a meeting skills, right? Those facilitation skills. So that, because we're so used to it, I guess, it sort of becomes a strength or a skill that wouldn't necessarily be present in everybody in the organization. And it's really important for improvement that you can put structure on a conversation, come out the other end with clear actions and responsibilities and all of that. The other thing, maybe, I suppose I'm speaking from a coach maybe, but we're not afraid to ask the challenging but also emotional questions. So I think as leaders, sometimes leaders are so close to people on a day-to-day basis, they don't want to get into the emotional side because it feels a bit uncomfortable because we have to work with these people every day. So, you know, getting into emotions, is that sort of crossing a line or a barrier? But, you know, when you're a coach or a consultant, it's so much easier to say, how do you feel about your work? You know, it's just not this fluffy question. To us, it's really important and we understand it, but we're just so used to that language and understand the need for it. So, well, there's two.
I like it. That's great. I think the question that might get you fired, everybody's afraid to ask that one, right? Like, why is nobody not saying this? And this is maybe some encouragement for any consultants that might be listening. Like, ask the tough questions. That's why we hired you, is to ask those tough questions. So,
yes.
I think that's great. I think there's definitely a role for that. Let me ask you, you mentioned a little bit about your own journey and how you got into this discipline. I'm curious if you might have some advice or some recommendations for somebody like yourself, maybe somebody in university or maybe somebody who's just kind of working in a manufacturing job and somebody in their company said, hey, we're going to implement KPI Fire and I want you to listen to this podcast, or they're seeing this on YouTube. What kind of advice might you have for somebody who is just thinking, maybe this is more than just a job that I have while I'm going to school? This could be like, maybe there's something more for me here.
I suppose I'm a big fan of micro learning at this stage. I probably have done so many long courses in my life, which, you know, I'm happy with, but these days it's a different kind of way that people learn, right? So micro learning. So I think LinkedIn is a great way to do that. So just connecting with people who you find interesting, who are doing jobs that you find interesting, and don't just connect with them, reach out and say, have you got 15 minutes for a chat about what you do? I'd love to learn more. I do one of those nearly every week. People reach out to me and I've absolutely no problem. You know, why not? When I have the time, why not? And also it's a good chance to reflect, I think, on your own maybe journey or what you're doing in life. You know, these questions are good. So nobody minds you asking them. The other thing is, I guess, go and see, can you, I did that actually. I did some shadowing with a consultant before I went in to taking on some work for them as a subcontractor. We got permission, obviously, and I went and shadowed and said, what does a consultant do when they go into an organization? So I found somebody to shadow. He's a very nice guy and gave me a good start into this. Those two things would be the most important.
That's excellent. So what I want to do now is a little section. We'll call this rapid fire. So these are just five quick questions with brief, short answers. So the most important job of a leader is to
develop people to become other leaders.
I love it. Develop people. That's such a good one. Are there some books that you recommend that people might be interested in?
My favorite book is John Whitmore's Coaching for Performance, because it has both the coaching side, but it also has a whole chapter on how you use coaching for your lean and continuous improvement efforts. And it breaks it down into actual conversations. So it's great.
I'm adding that one to my reading list right now because I haven't read it yet, but I love book recommendations. Who are some thought leaders, maybe one to three or a longer list if you've got them, people that you recommend people interested in this continuous improvement discipline should follow?
Yeah. So, well, I have to give a shout out to my colleagues, Patrick Adams and Andy Ulrich and Shane Doffenbaugh, who I work with on a podcast. And I think they're great and they're just great guys. But then on LinkedIn, there's other people. So Ryan Tierney, actually, he's the owner of Seating Matters and he wrote a great book and should look him up. Olaf Better. He's great on LinkedIn. Elsa, she's brilliant. Karen Martin, I think she's great. Katie Anderson, Chad Burita, just so many, but they're some of the people I follow who just put out great content and there's great learning from their posts.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. There's a few names in there that I'll have to go follow myself. What is your favorite go-to problem-solving tool from the Lean Toolbox? We know it's not all about the tools, but I'm wondering if there's one that you find yourself pulling out, you know, more frequently than others.
Yeah, well, I believe that curiosity is the most important trait of anybody in this position of a consultant and a coach. So I would go with five whys, whether it's three whys or eight whys, but I would go with the whys because I think they're your ultimate tool to understand, to get to the root. You could say a root cause, but I think five whys is how you get there. So I'll go with that one.
I'm with you. That's one of my favorites as well. I love to get to one of my favorite questions is, what is the problem that we're actually trying to solve here? So many discussions, like, you know, can go on and on and on. If you can get to like, what is the problem that we're trying to solve, man, you can really save a lot of time. Continuous improvement is?
I think it's the habit of staying curious and proactive.
What is one question that leaders are not asking, but perhaps they should be?
I think leaders should ask themselves regularly, what's it like to be led by me? So what that means is, I guess you are looking at the job you have as a leader and the impact you're having on the people, processes, environment around you, and looking at it from their perspective as opposed to your perspective. So it's a little bit of shift in perspective, which I think doesn't always happen.
Wonderful. Yeah, I love it. I love it. Well, Catherine, thank you so much for joining us. For anybody that wants to connect with you outside of this podcast, how might they connect with you or follow you?
Yeah, so I'm on LinkedIn under Catherine McDonald. My company's name is MCD Consulting. And if you just put in Catherine McDonald, Lean Leadership Coach, it'll pop up.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining us today and having this conversation. You shared such good wisdom and such a good perspective on this discipline of continuous improvement. I'm super grateful for having you join us here. And hopefully we could do this again sometime in the future. This has been so much fun.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Keith, for having me on. Really appreciate it. Great chat.
Absolutely. This episode of KPI Fireside is brought to you by KPI Fire. KPI Fire is continuous improvement software. KPI Fire helps you align strategy, drive execution, and engage your people all in one powerful software platform. So whether you're leading a team or transforming an entire organization, KPI Fire is your partner in achieving breakthrough results. You can learn more at kpifire.com. And Catherine, thanks again so much for joining us. It's been a real pleasure. If anybody listening would like to suggest a guest, ask a question, or give us ideas for future episodes or content, you can reach out to me, Keith Norris, on LinkedIn. And this concludes this episode of KPI Fireside, a continuous improvement podcast. If you have enjoyed today's episode, be sure to follow us on the socials and share the podcast with friends or colleagues who are as passionate about continuous improvement as you are. And you can find us wherever you get your podcast. Until next time, keep driving progress and sparking change.